This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Any home or business can quickly become infested with mold with the introduction of a water source, like a roof or plumbing leak. When your home, your belongings, or your business becomes damaged, it's not just about cleaning up the mess. It's about reclaiming your life, and that's why you need to call the Water and Mold Removal Hotline. A licensed, fully insured, affordable, non-invasive solution to solving any water and mold problems. Our team of trained specialists are available with 24/7 emergency service. We will quickly evaluate your problem and give you a plan that will guarantee results. Water causes damage and mold can spread throughout your property in as little as 48 to 72 hours and can produce allergens and irritants that have the potential to cause serious health hazards. So don't waste time. Give us a call now. For any water or mold problems, call the Water and Mold Removal Hotline.
Call 800-442-7043 today for a free estimate. That's 800-442-7043. 800-442-7043.
Glenn Beck.
The Blaze Radio Network.
I kind of made it my goal this year to everything I do to try to remember small minds talk about people, average minds talk about events, and great minds talk about ideas. And the problem with America is we've been small-minded. All of us have talked, we're just talking about people. Let's get to a higher level and start talking about ideas. I wanted to bring in Dr. Jonathan Haidt. He is the author of The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion. His research, he's done a ton of it, and it has shown why we're so divided on politics. And there's a pretty easy way to come together, at least the way I see it. I want to hear his take on this. Dr. Haidt, welcome. How are you, sir?
Very well, Glenn. So pleased to be here. I have to tell you that when I started working on the book, when I set out to try to understand conservative views, and I was on the left back then, yours was one of the first shows I started listening to. So I'm just really pleased to be here talking with you.
Ooh, I was a guinea pig. What did you feel at the time, or what did you come away with? I'm fascinated by this.
So I was always on the left, like most people in my sort of social environment, and I just couldn't stand that the Democrats in 2000 and 2004 seemed to have no clue how to talk about morality, no clue how to connect with American values. So I set out to do research that would help them understand, and I thought, well, first I have to understand. I have to start listening to what conservatives have to say. And so I started subscribing to National Review. I started listening to your show and Hannity and a few others. And I expected to be angry. I expected to feel negative emotions. But my dominant feeling, especially when listening to you, in addition to the fact that it was funny, was, oh, gosh, I never looked at it that way. Oh, that's interesting. I never saw that side of the question. So it was actually fascination.
Wow. Well, I have to tell you, because of your book, I mean, your book is really impacted. I'd love to bring you down sometime and talk to you. Your book is impacting everything that I do right now, because I read your book and thought, huh, wow, I've never looked at it that way. I didn't realize these are the real differences between us, and a lot of it. And I kind of learned this instinctively just by going to different churches. I'm a very open guy. I'm a strong member in my own faith, but I love going to different churches. I love learning about other people's religions and their faiths and their traditions. And what I found over the years is we're saying most of the same thing, probably 90, 95% of the same thing. We're just saying it in different ways, and we stick to those language patterns, and we think, if you don't say it that way, well, then you mean something else entirely. And we get bogged down most times in language differences.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So I think the thing we have to add to that is that human nature is fundamentally tribal. So even though we all have the same human nature, part of that human nature is that we just love to form teams, and then we give our team the benefit of the doubt, and we're always looking for what's wrong with the other team. And under regular circumstances, we also, you know, we like to trade, we like to meet other people, but when we get into battle mode, when we're very good. Humans evolved for intergroup conflict, basically for war. And so as soon as we have the sense that they have done something to us, or there's a shortage and we're fighting them for some scarce resource, we instantly go into tribal mode. And then those little differences that you're talking about, they just loom so large, and we make a big deal out of them, and we miss the big picture, which is that we actually are all morally motivated. We all are trying to make the world a better place.
Right. And I will tell you, Jonathan, that this is one of the regrets of you know, my past in broadcast is I fell into that tribal mode, and I still believe everything that I, you know, have always believed. I haven't changed my principles, but I have changed the way I see other people and the way I phrase things or believe they should be phrased. For instance, I'm trying to banish the word evil from my lexicon because I overuse it. And we have begun to see each other on both sides as good versus evil. And we're not. We're not. Our side's not really, you know, all good, and the other side's not evil. We have a touch of both of us or both of those things in all of us. And we if we can see the humanity in each other, maybe we can start to come together.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We do tend towards Manichaeism. Manichaeism was 2nd century Persian, I forget exactly what, but we fall into this trap of thinking that the world is divided between the forces of darkness and the forces of light, and we, on our side, we're entirely the forces of light, and they are entirely evil. But to defend you or to exonerate you a bit, the game has changed. What I mean is that there's a time for playing politics hard and really giving it all you got to try to defeat the other side. And that's okay when the game rules are in place and the game is structurally sound. But we have, in the last few years, I think we've crossed over into a dangerous zone in which the game is falling apart. And what I mean is everyone on the left thinks that Trump is Hitler and he's going to destroy the country, and people on the right thought the same about Hillary. But what I'm worried about is that the forces pulling us apart are now so much stronger than they were even 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
that the country is in danger, and we've got to change the way we play the game. I'm not saying anyone needs to say, okay, you know, my side was wrong, but we've got to stop demonizing the other side, and the fact that some people on the left now are saying violence is morally justified, I mean, this is just terrifying to me. This is red lights are flashing.
Is it because I really believe, Jonathan, I talk to a lot of people and I go around the country and I have this sense that there is a pull. It's not overwhelming, but it's just beneath the surface. People are locked into their positions, but they have this sense of, I'm not sure if this is right or good. And there is this pull underneath the surface on both the left and the right to find another way and to find reason and to find a connection to each other. I think we have a window of opportunity here. I'm afraid it can close quickly as the war machine gears up, because I do believe there's a few people on the fringes of both sides that want us to war with each other and want to tear us apart. But I don't think the average person does. Is that accurate? And is it too late to come back together?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not picking that up. But then again, I'm in the academic world, and nobody will admit to having voted for Trump. It's quite dangerous to do so. The left is obviously much more upset now. I mean, we talked about Obama derangement syndrome on the right when Obama was president. Now we've got Trump derangement syndrome on the left. So I'm not picking that up. I'm glad to hear that you are. I'm expecting things to get a lot worse.
Me too.
I'm expecting there to be violence. And at that point, when there is more widespread violence, I'm hopeful that Americans who are mostly pretty moderate, reasonable people, I'm hopeful that the large moderate middle, whether it's center-right, center-left, libertarians, I'm hoping that at that point there will be more of a public outpouring of the sentiment that you just expressed, but I don't see it yet.
But do you see anybody moving in that direction? Do you see any, you know, I've been looking for the Martin Luther King. I've been looking for
Yeah.
I've been looking for somebody, and you know, basically, I've been going on the media begging for somebody.
Yeah,
please, somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see anything? Do you see any?
I think what it's going to take. I think it's going to take pairs of people. I mean, your two essays in the New York Times were just wonderful. And if you can find a partner, if you can find someone on the left who's willing to go on a speaking tour with you, someone who, I think that's what we most need, is to model personal relationships. This is what I mean by the game is now broken. Back, you know, if you can have somebody on the right and somebody on the left disagreeing, but showing some respect for each other, some friendship, some decency, that I think is so inspiring to people. And so that, I think, is how to be most effective. I hope you can find somebody who's solidly on the left, maybe, you know, sort of a mirror image of you. Do you know anyone, any left-wing commentators who you've even argued or debated with, who might go on a speaking tour with you?
I'm working in that direction. Yeah. I will tell you, Jonathan, I didn't expect to talk about this. The conversation has been, a speaking tour or tours are expensive. I've even said, I don't want to even make any money. How the hell do we pay for it? Because I'm not sure anybody would come. I'm not sure that the left would pay for a ticket to come see me speak, and I'm not sure my audience would come and see, pay money to see the other person speak. I just don't know. I don't know if there's, I mean, if we could do it for free, but, you know, we've demonized sponsorship so much that nobody wants to sponsor something like that. How can you get that done? And if there's a barrier of a ticket price, I think that might even be too much, let alone just the barrier of you actually have to get up and go and listen to somebody you disagree with.
Right. No, I think you may be right about that, in which case, I think just finding someone to write with, writing jointly sponsored essays the way Mike Bloomberg and Charles Koch did, there are a few examples. So laying the groundwork, I'm hopeful that you can lay the groundwork. I'm doing what I can to provide the sort of intellectual arguments for why we need to ultimately have more compassion for each other. I think we need to begin laying the groundwork so that if things do get really nasty, if things get much, much worse, and there is then some sentiment for a return to sanity and decency and enough is enough, I'm hopeful that you'll be one of the players involved in coming back to sanity.
Jonathan, do you see, are you optimistic in all your research, are you optimistic that we, and I say this not as America, just as the West, that we weather the storm that is coming?
I am not optimistic, actually. I am fairly pessimistic, and my main reason is social media. Many people point out we've been here before. 1968 was much more violent, the Civil War, the 1820s. We've had times of turbulence like this. But I'm very worried that social media is so effective at finding every possible outrage committed anywhere in a high school in America, in any little corner, anywhere.
Yeah, that's a fact.
It selects the most emotionally angering portrayals of it and feeds it to us. So I think the media landscape has changed in ways that play up our tribal nature, our worst side. Religion is weakened. Religion used to be much more of a counterforce for moral humility, for giving the benefit of the doubt, for not focusing on the speck in your neighbor's eye. So I think the centrifugal forces blowing us apart are much stronger now than the centripetal forces that are pulling us in. So I'm not optimistic in the near term. Now, in the long run, it's always been a mistake to bet against America. Something's going to happen. There are going to be changes. So I don't know what will happen in 50 years, but I'm not optimistic about the next 5 or 10.
Well, you're a little beam of sunshine.
That's just the way I'm feeling these days.
I know. Imagine living in my head. All right. So, Jonathan, let's talk a little bit about the things that we have in common. And you know, you talk about these five core pillars. Jonathan, you, and if you can, I think we booked you for, so you can come back tomorrow at the same time to talk about in depth the moral foundation theory. But the moral foundation theory, when I read this, it just opened my mind so much to go, oh my gosh, we can talk to each other. This can work. And I have seen it work. I'm applying it, and I'm seeing it work miracles. Do you want to explain it a little bit, and then we can go into depth tomorrow?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So first, you know, let me give your listeners the secret to human relationships, the most important conflict resolution technique there is, which is when you're interacting with someone and there's any kind of conflict, start with acknowledgement. Start by speaking to them in a way that acknowledges what they might be right about, what you think they are right about. When you do that, when you speak to them, and you're announcing that you're not on the attack. You're not just playing lawyer trying to convict them. Okay, so what are the buttons you can press? What are the ways you can appeal? Well, in my research, it began by looking at cultures around the world and looking at what are the foundations of human morality, what are the taste buds of morality. I guess we'll get into them specifically tomorrow, but the short list is issues of care and fairness are the ones that the left mostly builds on. The right has those, they care about those things, but the right, the social conservatives, also really value loyalty, authority, and sanctity. They're more patriotic, they're more religious. The left is more universalistic and concerned about human rights. They're often suspicious of nations or patriotism. So if you're talking to, if a progressive is talking to someone on the right, you know, if they start off by actually praising America's role in the world and all that America has stood for and just anything that speaks to conservative values, and then you can put in some, then you can make your argument. But it's so important to start by speaking the other's language, by getting them off of battle stations. That's the main trick. And that goes when you have an argument with your spouse as well.
Now, you get into this tomorrow, but you said that the right has all five of these, mm-hmm. but the left doesn't.
That's right.
And this is where we get lost.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's more a relative matter. What I mean by that is everyone knows what it means to be part of a group and issues of loyalty. But you know, there's an old skit in there's a Monty Python movie, The Life of Brian. And there are,
you know what, I hate to do this. I've got 10 seconds left and I don't want to, I hate to cut you off. We will have you, we'll begin there tomorrow. America, you need to hear this. Jonathan Haidt, thank you so much, or Haidt, thank you so much for being with us.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
Hey, I want to talk to you a little bit about the trouble that I have sometimes with my son and my daughter. They love the internet, as I do. The internet is an incredible resource, educational, social, recreational. It's all good, except it's not all good. Some of it is real bad, and it can show up on your kid's screen when you least expect it. So how do you as a parent handle it? I want to tell you about Hero Parental Control. It's the most comprehensive family internet solution available, and the activity from all of your family's devices can be filtered, can be monitored, and even tracked via GPS from a dashboard on your phone or your iPad. Material that may be healthy for a teen can be harmful to a young child, and so you need to have the perfect protection level from toddler to teen to mom and dad. One of the most important steps to a safer internet in your home is recognizing this is a really big issue. Hero gives you the power to create a protected and nurturing online environment. There's nothing like it. Try Hero. Block the bad. Choose what's good for your family. Visit blazehero.com. That's blazehero.com.